Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the rugged fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score, which would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats Football History That's Memorabilia, with the Gridiron Greats Publisher and Broadcasting Network, in conjunction with Swick Enterprises. We're live from the Wallingford, Connecticut home of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150 plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host. He is a senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Larger. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. And Joe will be on in a couple of minutes.
Nope.
And before
I'm good, Joe's here.
Okay.
Let's just listen again.
Joe is here. Welcome to the show this evening.
Right. Yeah. There you go. There's kids in the background.
Tonight's show is going to be a complete open forum, and we're going to be going over a few topics, a few hobby happenings, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to look at a couple different subject areas, which I think are very relevant and very interesting to the hobby. Before we begin, a couple small pieces and tidbits of both football and hobby news. A couple of people have been asking me what my feelings are as far as whether or not a football season is going to be occurring or not within the fall. And, you know, like I tell them, I honestly don't know the perimeters that are going to be imposed, if any, as far as games are concerned, fans, so on and so forth. I have a very strong indication in certain states training camps will be occurring, and they're going to be, you know, obviously taking all sorts of different precautions. As far as the season is concerned, I haven't a clue with regards what will or won't happen. So, you know, I hate to you know, not give definitive news because I really haven't heard anything one way or the other with regards to what's going on. I've just basically been following what I've been reading both online and in the papers as far as what's going to happen. I think a lot will be determined if and when Major League Baseball starts and following what they're going to do and how they're going to do it, so on and so forth, will be a subject for football to follow at the same time. And other than that, that's all I can really look at or view. I can only imagine somebody's going to come up with saying that the players need to have shields on their helmets or whatever type of thing, and I don't see how that's going to fly one way or the other, But it will remain to be seen. So that's a bit news with regards to the upcoming season, both college and the pro game. I know high schools here in Connecticut, they're pretty much unknown, other than they're going to try for a fall sports schedule. What will happen, again, anybody's guess. All right. Joe, are you there? Okay. We're going to wait a couple more minutes. A couple more pieces of news. Oh, you're here. Okay.
Yeah.
Ready to go?
Just my input on the season, yeah. Imagine face shields. Imagine how practice happens it's a debacle, isn't it?
I mean, how do you play a game that's physical contact, so on and so forth, and supposedly be safe or whatever? But, I don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen. So we just got to take one day at a time, and that's it. And I prefer right now.
Think about how the NBA is.
Think about
how the
NBA is
doing it. They're taking the entire league and quarantining them in Orlando, not allowing them to see their family. I mean, it's got to be tough to get pro athletes to agree to go away from their family and the news and live in a hotel away from everything for the duration of the season.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to fly. You know what I mean? Well, we'll see what happens. That's it. Take a day at a time, and that's it. We can only speculate.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Good point.
Leading off on our open forum to get started, there was a very interesting Leyland's auction, and there was a Jim Thorpe Canton photo in the auction, and there's been speculation as far as what type photo number it is. Was it a type 1, a type 2, or type 3?
Yeah.
And Joe, I know you've done a lot of research in this over the years as far as type photos. Can you give our audience a little background on the differences between types 1, 2, and 3 photos?
Yeah, exactly. And this auction is ongoing, so I hope I'm not outing anything for anyone. But obviously, this touches a couple bases for me. It's a Jim Thorpe photo. It's vintage. It's an incredible piece. So I think Leland's ends this Friday night. This is a classic photo. This is Jim Thorpe standing in his Canton Bulldog uniform. It's a black and white, holding his helmet down at his side. And if you're having a hard time envisioning it, first of all, what are you doing listening to this broadcast? And second of all, it's on his, it's the same photo that's on his 1933 Sport King card and the same photo that's on his 1955 Topps All-American card. It is an iconic photo. It just summarizes Thorpe, summarizes vintage football. A lot of people see the C and they assume it's Carlisle, but this is later on when he's with Canton. And PSA has this graded type 2. Leland's advertised it as type 1 and then later recanted that and sent out a correction and gave people the option, myself included, to rescind their bid. Type 1 or type 2, it's still, an iconic photo. The difference between type 1 and type 2 is it's kind of subjective. Type 1 is a photo that is struck from an original negative. That was printed within 2 years of taking the picture. Type 2 is struck from the original negative after 2 years of the photo being taken. So you take 2 years, 365 times 2, 730 days, on day 731, you print off that negative and it's type two. You know, 730,
right. Okay.
You know, 730 days, it's type one. Type three photos are, you know, copies of photos taken from a photo. You know, it starts to get down. Suddenly you're just in a newspaper, you know, newspaper photos and stuff. But so type one, type two, you know, they're both from the same original negative. Just it's when the photo was struck. Leland's has this photo labeled as circa 1940, and most of this image is you know, right around the early 20s, you know, about 1923 or so. So it's who knows? I mean, what, 17 to 20 years after, you know, the picture was taken, this was printed off from a negative. But you know, this, some people, doesn't matter. It's still an iconic photo.
Right.
And again, given the time frame of when it was actually printed, in
yeah.
You know, say it is printed in the late 30s, early 40s, it's still, you know, technically from a bygone era, and it's also going to be a very, very different, you know, piece other than something that's reprinted later on. And with laser printers
exactly.
Today, there's so many things reprinted, it's not even funny. It's interesting,
yeah.
I was going to say, as an aside, I recently picked up a small collection locally from a guy who was moving, and he thought he had a gem piece. It was an 8x10 photo of Gail Sayers from a, I don't have it in front of me, from a Illinois-based tool company. And he asked me straight out, he says, is this a real photo from the 1960s? And I said to him, not at all. I said, and I showed him how the paper was, you know, virtually new. And I said, my assumption is he was at a show somewhere signing, and either the promoter or whoever printed up a bunch of them off his laser printer or had them laser printed, and they were using autographs. So he understood what I said. I showed him the configuration of the way it was printed, and I showed him a couple pieces that I had from the 60s just to verify, you know, this is an original photo from the 1960s. Yours is a one printed much later. So, I mean,
yeah.
Understood, you know, other people, other, you know, obviously dealer. Yeah. Other dealers, you know, would say, no, it's genuine or an eBay seller or whatever. And it also leads me to give a second example. One of the most reprinted, in my opinion, photo sets of the 1960s were the 1962 Tang photos, which were basically, you know, later day eBay dumps where people would, you know, pick them up. They would bill them as original. And I know this happened to me on two occasions. I bought a couple photos and I, you know, checked them out. And I said right away they were reprints. And then, you know, I compared them to my original set that I had that I bought years ago. And you could just tell the difference between the quality of the paper, you know, and the different
yeah.
formations and the print, so on and so forth. That's why it's very important. If you're going to get into photos and you're going to buy photos, make sure you understand the differences between type one, type two, and type three. And the way you explained it is perfectly, you know, it's perfectly correct. Because
yeah.
type
this,
one
this
is the most rare.
A good photo.
Type
exactly.
one is,
this one's got
is
a,
the
a
most
newspaper
rare.
Slug on the back. Sorry about
mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No. The type one are the most desired, especially for any
yes.
older photo. And you're correct in saying a lot of newspaper photos, too, can be considered type ones, especially if you see the print on the back of them at the same time. You know,
and that's
use,
the quickest
use on
way
such,
to identify them is, you know, the newspaper slugs. A lot of times, I mean, it's stamped right on there. I collect, obviously, a lot of, you know, Red Grange photos, and a lot of them are, you know, newspaper that were printed from the negative, and then on the back is the newspaper slug where they describe the game, the date, et cetera. So that's, you know, that's an obvious one. About a decade ago, I learned most of what I know about type one and type two photos, just the, you know, origination of photos from, you know, John Spano teaching me. So I remember calling him and just kind of hat in hand, like, all right, well, what's the difference? Because I was looking at a photo with a newspaper slug on the back. And I thought that if a newspaper printed a photo, that it was type 2. And he's like, no, because, you know, this is back in the day when newspapers had sports journalists and they'd go out and take these photos.
Right.
So they owned the negative. So it's a type 1 photo. So it's pretty cool. And, you know, there's another tip of the hat to our beloved hobby where you can ask people questions and, you know, even basic questions. You know, I mean, we're a learning hobby and we're passing this stuff on. Here we are. We're passing this stuff on. So, but
exactly.
There's a sports bar here in Portland that about 6 years ago opened. And this was a massive sports bar, you know, second floor sun deck, just a really cool place. Had theater seating, like bleachers. And on the side of the building, they painted about a 30-foot tall Jim Thorpe. This photo, you know, this Canton Bulldog photo, is about 30 feet tall. Watching, I drive by this on my way to my office, just watching this guy boom up in a lift every day and outline it and paint it. It was stunning. I mean, it was right by the entrance to the sports bar, and it was just iconic. And I loved it. And I was so happy to see that go up. Somebody appreciated it. And then somebody sued the bar because they didn't have an original photo. They were copying a copyrighted photo.
Oh, my
God. I heard more. And I heard a whisper that there was a lawsuit pending. And the bar was like, well, of course we don't have a photo. And I don't know what the statute of limitations is on, you know, copyrights for photos, but the bar acquiesced and painted over this photo, this painting of Jim Thorpe. And I was just stunned.
Wow.
So,
wow.
It would have been kind of cool to have a type 1 or type 2 original photo and be able to walk over to them and say, hey, you can borrow this. I will allow you to copy this image.
Wow. That's unbelievable.
So, yeah.
But, and I can guarantee you the reason why they did it. That the reason why they were doing it is because it was for profit. They're saying to themselves, they're using that image and he's going to make a profit off of it because he has the bar. And, there are people constantly looking at this stuff to try to say, you know, we're not going to allow it, yada, yada, yada. And a lot of this stuff gets turned down and it gets eliminated. And it's amazing. Truly amazing.
Yeah.
That's interesting too, because over the years I've had several people open up sports bars looking for certain pieces or whatever. Either I had them or I guided them to people that I knew that had them, so they could hang it up in the place. And that's one thing though they never really got into. They were more into uniforms, jerseys, magazine covers, so on and so forth. But to me, photos, add so much. As far as a great moment in a game or a great player.
Absolutely.
Or a team photo, whatever the case may be. So it's very interesting to see.
If you think of iconic football photos, this is one of them. Y.A. Tittle kneeling on the sideline, blood coming out of his ears, Dwight Clark catching a touchdown in the end zone. There's many, many. You know, iconic photos you can think of, and this is probably one of the top 3, 5, whatever.
Yeah.
It's just this Jim Thorpe image. So, well,
wow.
Leland, you know, a shameless plug for Leland's auction this Friday.
And it's don't forget, Leland's who take the back cover of Gridiron Greats magazine. I highly recommend them for your consignments and or purchasing anything from them, either through their auctions, and they have a great selection of items. Many, many iconic historical pieces have passed through Leyland's over the years. Second point we're going to look at tonight.
East Coast, West Coast thing, Leyland's versus Leyland's. You know better than I do.
Exactly.
So I'm not sure. I forget how you pronounce it.
Exactly. We are in the Mecca of sports memorabilia. Here in the East Coast. Touching briefly on something off that just popped in my mind, and I was going to talk about it later on, but I'll throw it out now. Speaking of East Coast, the National was rescheduled for some dates in December, and I know I was going to set up with Josh Adams, who normally takes a table booth there. At the National,
yeah.
And informed me already he's going to be skipping it. And I'm saying to myself, A, I still can't see how the show's going to come off in December. B, I personally would not want to drive from Connecticut to New Jersey in the winter, not knowing,
yeah.
you know, the weather forecasts. We could be stuck with a blizzard, ice storm, whatever the case might be.
Yep.
And as I get older, I really, you know, prefer not traveling during the winter unless I have to, or, you know, I have an all-wheel drive vehicle. I'm not overly concerned with it, but in ice, I really don't like driving in ice. And I always said to myself, that could be a corridor for a good ice storm. And then as you come more in inland, get into Connecticut, it's more of a snowstorm. So I'd rather drive on snow than ice. But long story short, they rescheduled it. It remains to be seen if they're going to have it. I'm not overly optimistic on it because I really can't see good attendance other than local attendance. And I can't see a ton of dealers going cross country to set up in New Jersey like that. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
With that. From my perspective, it's, you know, December's holiday parties. My birthday is in December.
Exactly.
My sister's birthday is in December. I mean, you've got holiday parties, weather, like you said, is that close to Christmas? It's just, it's such an unknown. I mean, and how would that be if you made a down payment on a table and then there's a blizzard? I mean, you know, you can't make it, you get your table back. And then, you know, and if there's a blizzard, even if you make it, what kind of attendance will there be?
So exactly.
Yeah, it probably should have just been a cancel versus a reschedule on that one.
I think realistically, you know, they're making a brave attempt to try to make sure they still have one this year. The way they set the dates up, because these were the only dates available at the convention center there in Atlantic City, it's running from a Saturday to a Wednesday. So the logic, you know, you're going to have to make all your money on a Saturday and Sunday, because I can't see great attendance Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, not unless you're open at night.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, I don't know.
Yeah.
It just doesn't sound good one way or the other.
You've been to your share of nationals. Think about how many people pack up and leave on Sunday. I mean, you know, by noon on Sunday, the national's empty. So the people make good money on Saturday, and then Sunday, you know, rolls around and looks like low attendance Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. It'll be an empty hall, which is always sad to see.
Exactly. That's why normally when, you know, if the show's in either Cleveland or Chicago, I traditionally left Saturday night, even though, you know, I just share a spot with another dealer. I normally leave Saturday night or fly out Sunday morning because, you know, I can't afford to take the extra day. And Sunday, you know, traditionally is a wholesale day at a show where dealers want to just get rid of stuff so they don't have to bring it home. It's not logical.
Good point.
I just assume if we have any more local shows here, which the talk is in the fall, we're going to have a couple small shows. I may set up there, or if not, I'm not overly concerned. But just to point out, the next edition of Gridiron Greats magazine, which will be out the end of July, which was traditionally the national issue, will not be a national issue this year. And I know a couple people asked me about it. I said, it's just not going to be this year. The second point we were going to talk about tonight was PSA and turnaround times. Joe, I'm going to hand off to you on that, too, and let me know what's going on with that.
Well, it's tough. I mean, PSA, you know, you and I were lamenting about this, you know, earlier, and it's just I made a 3-card submission, you know, to PSA, a couple leaves and one, you know, Chickle card to remain unnamed. And let's just say it's second series, and he played for the Bears. And he wore number 3. I'll let you go from there. But a 3-card submission that I made early February, and it's just tough. I give pause for any COVID related issues. But you know, when it's, you know, 3-4 week turnaround and 4 months later, you're kind of tapping your feet. I mentioned, you know, previously I have about 25 cards I wanted to submit, and it's just not worth it at some point. I mean, and usually what I do is I wait for the national to roll around. I renew my, my whatchamacallit, my, you know.
Subscription to the.
Subscription, thank you. My, yeah, to, you know, to PSA. And I asked Todd Tobias to, you know, help a brother out and walk these through. And, you know, and I pay a little bit extra, but I get them immediately. As my wife will tell you, I'm an impatient man in the first place. But then, you know, when it comes to your cards, and I don't know, and maybe I'm just going back to 10 years ago where it would take 6-8 weeks, but you're okay with 6-8 weeks.
Yeah.
And if the new norm is, you know, 5 months, I don't know. I don't know if I'm okay with the new norm. You know, there's been talk of them opening an East Coast branch, but apparently not. They don't like to encapsulate away.
Are they saying basically it's because of the virus, or is it because just the large amount of submissions they received because people really have nothing else to do other than sending their cards? You know, that's what I'm curious about. You know what? You know.
Well, I think the whisper was it was 3-4 months even prior to COVID, and then you know hit an 8-week pause for COVID, and you know you're up in that 6-month range, and you know if people had nothing else to do, like you mentioned, which is you know one of the reasons I have 25 more cards to submit. If people had nothing else to do during lockdown, you know they were mailing more stuff in and nobody was there. I mean that's even more of a backlog.
So basically, if you sent it in during normal times, how long would it take you to get it back? Or did you buy the expedient service or the expedient service or speech service is not available right now?
I have a member, you know, I have a basic membership. I mean, I'm nothing special. I don't submit enough to warrant anything greater than that. You know, they were saying it was about 3 months. You know, so I mean, we're coming up on, you know, month 4.5. You know, with a 2-month pause. So I guess if I get them in the next month, then they're in their window.
Okay.
Then
I'm
guessing not. You know,
right.
It's just you know, and they're it's tough. You know, PSA is the biggest game in town. You know, in town there. Their label fetches a little bit more than FTC, et cetera. And I think I'd mentioned I sent, we had, you know, Jeff Payne on a couple weeks ago, and we mentioned, you know, the 1926 Pottsville postcards that we won
right.
Heritage that
right.
were autographed. I had 4 of those. I sent those into SGC to get encapsulated. I'm not even concerned with a grade. There's just certain things
mm-hmm.
you just want physically protected. And I sent them in, and I wrote on the application just any grade. And they sent them back because they're autographed. And they're like, no, we grade these. It's just an autograph. I'm like, well, I don't want the autograph. Just grade them.
Right.
And if you want to call the autograph a mark, give me an SGC 10. And he's like, you know, and the reply back from their grader was, we don't want to grade anything with an autograph, even a 10, because it would confuse people that we are grading the autograph. So,
oh my
but
Lord.
You get a little bit more difficulties. Little, you know, you get difficulties from SGC, delays from PSA, and no way in hell I'm, you know, getting a 26 Pottsville maroon postcard graded by Ed Beckett.
exactly.
That'd look a little
exactly.
funny.
Exactly.
so it's just it's just it's tough.
It's you know, again, I don't have to say it for the millionth time. I'm not into graded cards. I've never been. And here's an example of frustration in the hobby that if you send something in, you know, you want it back in a reasonable amount of time. Obviously, a lot of businesses I've fully understood there are problems that people have with regards to, with the virus and all that. So obviously they had issues with regards to being probably shut down for X amount of time. Now they're getting back. And the onslaught of the backlog is tremendous, and you know everybody's going to have to hurry up and wait, type of thing. Now, as far as the autograph is concerned, with regards to why SGC would not grade it, that's a different story. I you know, kind of question that in a way because again, if you're going to grade things, now you're saying you're going to pick and choose what you're going to grade. Well, how does that help the hobby? Well, it helps the hobby in a way you're not going to grade things you don't feel comfortable with. But at the same time, if there's only technically 3 services grading, which are Beckett, PSA, and SGC, then, you know, who's grading autographs? What's the specialization of it? You know what I mean? And you know, Jim Spencer for years, obviously,
Yeah.
You know, an expert, and you know, yeah. I haven't talked to Jim in several years. Long story short, he goes to work for somebody else. There goes that independent grading. And B,
yeah.
there, you know, now you only got one place you can send anything to, which is now going to further backlog the time frame you're going to get anything back from. So that doesn't help the hobby either.
Like,
so,
PSA has a different colored slab for autograph authentication.
Right,
so it's the red,
it. Yeah.
You know, the red and
yeah.
white flip for card grade, and it's a different color. I forget what it is. I think it's blue. Anyways, it's a different color slab for an autograph. And
mm-hmm.
SGC could do the same. So, I mean, if you see an autographed card and it's the red and white flip, you know that they graded the card and not the autograph. And if you
right.
see
right.
it, you know, see it with the other, with the autograph colored flip, you know that they graded the autograph. SGC could pretty easily do something like that. You know, I don't know. I just, you think they could write on there, like, you know, no auto or something. I don't, who knows? You know, I'm a small fish in a big pond here when it comes to grading. I mean, I'm lucky if I grade, you know, 25 things a year.
Right,
you know, there's
right,
dealers
right.
that, you know, PWCC, Probstein, those guys are, you know, dropping 10,000 cards a month off to get graded. If
right,
they've got an
right.
issue, they call Rez on his cell phone. You know, they go over to Joey O's house and go hot tub and get problem solved.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
I just get on Gridiron Grades podcast and complain.
And I always said I should have bought stock in plastic companies before all this started, because the amount of plastic that is consumed is just mind-boggling.
Oh yeah.
You know, relating
well,
that,
and,
you've
and
briefly
I'm starting
SGC.
To subscribe to your point of view, you know, Bob, where I don't really care about the grade. I mean, the stuff that I'm buying is so old. I'm just happy to have it. I'm not really
yeah.
condition sensitive, which is what, you know, the
yeah.
PSA and the registry thrives on. But there are some things you just want physically protected, and I'm sure you could think of some things in your set. That,
oh yeah, yeah.
You know, you just for the physical protection. I'm irregardless of the grade. I just want to make sure this thing, you know, doesn't get dropped in a corner dinged or something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that, you know, that I look at all the older postcards. I really don't have a lot, but I have a, you know, let's put it this way, less than 50 vintage postcards, you know, turn of the century type basic football ones of players, teams, mostly Ivy League stuff. But at the same time, you know, I keep them in four pocket pages in an album. So that's the way
yeah.
I protect them. Obviously, not all of them are pristine in any way, shape, or form. A lot of them went through the mail. So on and so forth, but you know, that's the way I protect it. I'm not overly concerned about getting a grade on them, you know, and therefore I'm not gonna, I won't play the game with the grading. Now, tying into something you were saying, we're mentioning SGC. You wanted to touch briefly about their registry. Can give us our listeners some background on that?
Oh, when I texted you, I put registry. You know, around some air hyphens, you know, air apostrophe, you know, it's their registry is non-existent. It's just, you know, me and a friend were texting back and forth talking about, you know, the joke that the SGC registry is. I mean, and, you know, PSA nailed it. I mean, you know, you hear people say it all the time, that, you know, the registry is a hell of a drug. The minute you get, you know, a room full of men talking about the same set, and who's got the best set, you know, there's the drive of being number one of, and then awarding people and then acknowledging them, you know, just having the best of something is bragging rights. So, you know, and that has obviously, that was one of the things that fueled, you know, PSA's, you know, growth, and SGC
right, right.
for years has been promising to fix it. If you go to SGC's, you know, website right now, they've got, you know, emblazoned across the top, you know, new and, you know, something new and exciting, you know, coming, you know, but the problem is that's been up there for the last 6-8 months, you know,
right.
You know, some people, you know, Dave Foreman owns SGC, and some people say he owns it. It's kind of a luxury project. He owns it so that he gets expedited service on his cars.
Mm-hmm.
But, if you think about it, I mean, in yours and mine circle, there's two games in town, SGC and PSA. I mean, if somebody came to you with a Beckett, Beckett Joe Montana rookie card, you'd think they got it graded because it was sheet cut, or because they couldn't get a good grade, in PSA or SGC. Or unless it's modern. I mean, I would expect to see a Tom Brady, playoff contender card in a Beckett, but not a, not anything previous to 1988. So, I mean, really, we're talking about two. And when you compare, the volume that PSA has to SGC, it's like comparing, your mom and pop, your mom and pop Ace Hardware to Walgreens. I mean, it's like 90 times the volume, I think, that PSA has compared to SGC. So really, SGC is an annoyance to PSA. So they take a minor, fraction of it. So the SGC registry is a joke. I mean, and it's almost that ship might have sailed already, Bob. Because I mean, even if they came out and said we fixed it, it's mm-hmm. good. Think mm-hmm. about how many cards that SGC has graded that probably aren't even in their, in their inventory that they don't have a history of.
Right.
To enter it and it's screwed up. You have to have a full-time person doing nothing but taking scans from people of cards and, doing the data entry and entering them into the, into the database. So, one of these days, somebody needs to buy SGC and fix it because the brand is good.
Well,
the grading is trusted.
It's not a good, it doesn't bode well for their business, and it's not a good business model either. I mean, this hobby amazes me sometimes, dealing with some of the dealers and some of the vendors that are involved in it, that, a normal, you're a businessman, I'm a businessman, our business models seem to be dramatically different than what we see sometimes, in the hobby, and I'm putting it very, very eloquently
exactly.
when I say that.
You're exactly right.
Here's garbage. We're going to sell you garbage, and you accept the garbage. We're not going to take any, returns on it, and yada, 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 and that same song and dance. Well, that gets kind of tiring. And, I go back to the explosion of cards back in 1989 up, and I distinctly remember, people fighting with me. Well, you really should be trading your older cards for the newer cards because the newer cards have much more value than the older cards. And I said, there's no possible way you can give me that argument. And then to try to sell older cards, they're saying, there's no demand for them, therefore I'm only going to give you 5 or 10% a book, yada, yada, yada. And then to me, there's just the
you mean if the card was ungraded,
thing,
Bob?
Yeah.
You mean if the card was ungraded?
This is years ago, too, and then now today I get a few people say, the card's not graded. I don't know if it's real or not, and I just laugh at them. I said, I've been sitting on this card since 1965, let's say, so you're telling me it's not real. I said, okay. I said, all right. You want to believe that? That's fine with me. I'm definitely won't be doing business with you in the future. So, it is what it is. The hobby really, one day, I really hope, can clean itself up from those situations and, present a legitimacy as we see in other business models and other businesses, so on and so forth. So it just seems, in the collecting area, for whatever reason, sports memorabilia, sports cards, just plays by a whole different set of rules that just defy logic in some cases. And, I look at the national
business, that's like you said.
I look at the national convention as an example of something defying logic, that you're going to get all these dealers here in December, 2 weeks before the holiday and in the middle of possibly, a bad winter. We're just going to set up and we'll be there and that's no problem, So it's just truly amazing.
All right. Then I want to be clear. Even if I get frustrated at SGC for not grading, because there's an autograph on it, I get it. They don't have anyone in there to authenticate autographs, so they don't autograph them at all. They don't want to confuse, a slabbed autograph. I kind of get it, but to me it's a business opportunity for them, Turn away a $400 submission, come up with a solution, I'm constantly telling, my employees that, where it's just like, well, let's figure this out, but, let's make a customer happy. That's revenue. So
hey, we're going to write, you know, no auto grade or something on the flip, or, you know, no grade for auto, you know, something. We'll figure it out. It's pretty right. easy with an explanation. I don't know. That's just us. All right. Well.
All right, moving on to our next star after we've beaten up PSA and SGC pretty well tonight. On a lighter note, two things with my beloved Green Bay Packers. There were a bunch
yes.
of a series of 100-year videos that were put out about the Packers.
By the Packers.
I know you saw them
By
all.
The
I saw them all.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. There were oh. there were a few segments that brought tears to my eyes. And
incredible.
There was the two segments to me, which I lived through, and I as I got older and I had more contacts, I developed more contacts in the world, in the hobby world and in the football world. I heard a lot of stuff about the Packers of the 70s and 80s after Lombardi. And, you know, they made some moves that were just totally illogical to me over that time frame, which I always, you know, called it, the dark ages of the Packers, basically from when Lombardi left. You know, look at 1968 and go all the way up to roughly 1992. It was a bad time for the Packers. But this series was just superb as far as the way it was produced. The individuals that they interviewed, Bob Harlan, Ron Wolf, Holcomb,
yep.
you know, great former players, great videos of and film of days gone by. It's truly, truly amazing to see. And if you're interested in it, I did some research on it. You can actually go on YouTube, and they've been posting
yeah.
the videos. So you can pick them up and watch them. But I highly recommend it, even if you're not a Packer fan. I kind of wish for the anniversary of the NFL, each team did something like this, including the expansion teams, even though they don't have that big of a history. They could have done a couple of different segments about it. But the other teams that have the history, there was no reason why they could have not done something like this. In my opinion, which leads me to the next thing. We're
very running. Impressive videos. Oh, I just wanted to chime in on that. I mean, my Seattle Seahawks are young, you know. And one thing I'm always jealous of you East Coasters is having a football team with history. 1976 is not history. You know, I'm older than the Seattle Seahawks, so I mean, I am a closeted Green Bay Packer and Chicago Bears fan. Adore those teams. You know, the Bears for the obvious reason. You know, the Nagurskis. You know, the Luckmans, the Grange, and the Packers. Obviously, just steeped in history. You know, just going back and these videos, I watch them every time they came out, and I learned a lot about. You know, things I didn't know, but, you know, Curly Lambeau, the history, I had no idea that, you know, him leaving had, you know what that was about. Just incredible. And just, you know, the team that was assembled, and you summed it up when they got to the Lombardi era, you know, where, you know, they've got, you know, Ray Nitschke talking about, you know, you hired who from the Giants, you know, some guy from West Point. You know, and then it just shows, they start talking about his first day of practice. No, we're going to do it this way. We're going to do it, you know, and they just, you see them talking about this man, and you just get goosebumps, and you just realize that is a, you know, I think we've seen, you know, and you know, when you're in it, you don't appreciate it. So probably, you know, when you're around Lombardi, you're just like, awesome, we found the right coach. I mean, I would imagine it's the same way Patriots fans appreciate Hoodie, but don't realize he is a once in a generation kind of quarterback. You know, Bill Walsh. You know, you can rattle off probably a list of quarterback or of coaches on one hand. You know, and I don't know. It's just seeing all that about him, and you know, and it's just incredible. And just I posted that photo of him walking out of the tunnel.
just with the shadow. And how many men, people can just be, you know, be summed up with one picture, and it's not even of their face. It's him walking out. It's just him walking out through that tunnel. It just gave me goosebumps.
Yep.
It's amazing. Yep. I'm jealous of your team and your team's history, Bob.
Lombardi to me, I mean, epitomized the Packers, the era. And I think the one thing that he epitomized the most, in my opinion, was that he had a much stronger desire to be successful, to play by the rules, to win, to be victorious, because winning was a lot more fun than losing. And what I could never understand, and I still don't understand to this day, is how they went from that attitude when he left in 67, 68 for the Super Bowl, and they went 24 years, basically, without having that attitude again. It astounds me. I mean, they had a little with Bart Starr, but Bart Starr had just not had any talent to utilize to get more than a 500, you know, an 8-8 team, or, you know, a 500 team, and that's it. So it's just mind-boggling to me to, you know, to see it and to try to rationalize those 24 years of what I always call were the Packers' dark ages. But on a lighter note, again, there was an interesting Walker's Packers cleaner set that apparently came to auction on eBay and was able to be negotiated to a purchase that was divided by quite a few people. And right in front of me right now is the one and only type piece that I have of the Packers Walker's cleaners. I have the infamous number 21. Bo Melinda, who was a great fullback for the Packers. And I have it with the full tab. I have it right in front of me. It is ungraded. It is raw. It is in a very stiff holder. And I have it on display in my man cave, my football cave. Great piece. I picked it up from BSD years ago from one of their first initial buys of the Walker's cleaners. Background on it, it's a very unique series, which really a lot of people didn't realize existed for the past roughly, I would say, 10 years or so. And I know it's relatively in demand. It's more in demand with the actual tab. And the tab basically says Walker's Cleaners and Tailors, famous player series of Green Bay Packer football players, get the complete set of autographed portraits. And how many are there in the set, Jeff?
27 total. There's a couple of advertisements that advertise 26, but there are 27.
27 photos, right. Okay, so very difficult to find. There is also an album that these could have been inserted in. The album seemed to be super rare for whatever reason.
Yep.
And complete sets are very, very difficult to come by. And the sets with the actual tabs with them are much more difficult to find than just the photo itself. There seems to be a few more photos out there rather than the complete tab and the photo with it. So, you basically have hoarded most of them on the market over the years, from what I can gather.
What can I say? I'm a closeted Green Bay Packer fan, and I can't think of anything more historic than the Walker Packer cleaner. Yeah, this is steeped in Packer history. I mean, you can just rattle off some names. You know, Cal Hubbard, you know, Lambeau, you know, Johnny Blood, McNally. I mean, just you know, these are, you know, these are the Packers that, you know, the won all the championships in the 30s. It's a cleaning company. They started coming out. They started coming out in early 1931, late 30 or early 31, I believe. And it was one a month. And there's some advertising that, you know, that I've seen copies of, thanks to the Reverend Mike Moran. And one of, you know, they're emblazoned with, you know, Walker Packer cleaner, you know, free with any cleaning over $1. So apparently, you know, they had a new one every month. And you'd walk in, if your cleaning was over a dollar, they'd hand it to you with a tab. And then there's an advertisement that says, get a free leather band album to anyone who collected all 27. So apparently at the end, if you walked in of all 27, they would hand you a leather bound album.
Right.
So, but who knows? Who knows? And the last one was Whitey Wooden, and he's stamped 16th of July, 1932, or excuse me, there's an advertisement for him, January 16th, 1932. So it ended in 32. I go one step further with this set. I've made a list of the salutations each person has written, you know, in their autograph. So, I mean, and it's pretty interesting. Most of them, you know, just say thank you or something like that. I'd say about 75% of them signed something in addition to their name. And a couple of them have dates on them, like, you know, 1931, et cetera. So, I mean, you can see when this came out. It's called the 32 Walker Packer Cleaner, but, you know, Whitey Wooden was the last one in January of 32. It's probably 1931, you know,
right,
how it should
right.
be labeled. But, you know, again, going back, I remember when – oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Bob. I remember going back when one of these came up and Andy Becker calling me and describing it to me and going, okay, I got to have that. You know, that was probably 10, 12 years ago. And, you know, he and I split one that came up. I can't remember where it came up, but, you know, he's like, I have about 75% of it. I'd like to replace a few. If you give me the pick of the litter, I'll, you know, pay X. And so I came up with a partial set then. And, you know, it's incredible. It's, you know, I mean, what are there, you know, guesstimates between 8 and 10 sets exist, you know, that are exist. And half of those are missing tabs and half of them don't have an album to them. So,
let me put you on a limb and ask you, how many of each photo do you think are still in existence, hidden in people's collections, complete sets, so on and so forth? I mean, you know, I got a rough figure in my mind, but I'm just curious if you ever thought about it as far as how many do you think still exist?
I don't know. There's a BST auction that talks about, you know, 8 to 10. That was a couple of years ago. So maybe two more have been added. So call it 12. I mean, how many of them are hidden away in closets and in drawers, in attics? I mean, you know, as so many people have said, you know, think about what they'd have to survive for the last 90 years, you know, rodents, insects, fires, you know, paper drives, wars, floods, inadvertently getting tossed, et cetera. I mean, at some point, you know, 90, 100 years later, how many are going to be found? These are on very, you know, thin paper stock too. I mean, they don't weather very well. They don't take, you know, the elements very well. So, you know, if we were generous and said there's 14 sets, it's pretty good. And how many of those don't have tabs and how many albums are out there? So,
right.
It's, right.
I would venture to say, I'll go out on a limb, and I've said this to several people, I really believe there's probably, of each, with tabs and without tabs, probably 25 or less of each photo in existence. That's my gut feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And I could be way off, or I could be, you know, way under, so on and so forth. So, you know, there could be only 15, 16. There could be a couple hundred.
Yeah.
I just can't see a lot of these still in existence anywhere. To me, they're the rare of the rare of a Packer collectible, if there ever was one. So,
truly amazing. Think about what happened to them. Think about what happened to them. If you got your dry cleaning done and they handed you one, you went home and handed it to your kids or, you know, they thumbtacked them up. Or drew on them or brought them to school and taped them to their locker. You know, this is at the time, Green Bay, you know, if you watch the videos, you can see Green Bay wasn't, you know, as financially stable as they are now. I mean, you know,
right.
You know, it was a small town team in a small town market. So, I mean, how many of these even got issued? I mean, this is a cleaning company. So, I mean, how many of them got issued? Who knows? I mean, there might be, I'd be curious to go, because the address is stamped on the tab. I'd be curious to go to Green Bay, find where this cleaning company used to be, and imagine if it was still the original building, and somewhere in the back, you know, somebody, there was a box of these sitting there, and somebody has just backed them away, and they sell the building. Bob, you talk a lot about going and somebody's like, oh, here's this Mayo card. It doesn't have any name on it. Why don't you just give me a fiver for it? Imagine. Well, here's a box of old photos. Anybody want these?
Yeah, exactly. That would be truly an amazing sign to say the least.
There's the dream.
Unbelievable. All right, we're almost out of time, and we're not going to have enough time to talk about the last area of tonight's show. We'll go back to it, but just as a teaser for the next issue of Gridiron Greats magazine, which I may add there's going to be a few extra articles in it. There's not going to be a Super Collector feature for the next issue. I decided to pull it, and we'll be back in the fall with it. With a new Super Collector, but we got so many articles, so much information to look at, and you chimed in with a very interesting article on the 1988 Top stickers, both the full album stickers and the 67 Superstar stickers, and I had a whole segment, I had a good 15 minutes devoted for it. I got all my Top sticker albums in front of me, and I believe very strongly that the stickers were overlooked for years as more
without a doubt.
And as years went on and as warehouses started to get empty of case after case of these things, a lot of collectors grew to like them. And I still remember I would always try to find the album, and then I would actually physically stick them in the album. And, you know, just look at them, read them, and then I ended up with a bunch of extra stickers over the years. 1988, I always thought was pretty interesting because you had a two-for-one because now you have the 67-card Superstar set, which is actually a nice set for the back of the stickers. And then you still had the front of the stickers that you put in the album. So it was pretty neat innovation that they came up with in 1988. I kind of wish they did that every year. But they didn't. So,
I discovered it. I discovered it chasing stickers for the Steve Large Master Set. You know, and I'd buy an entire case of it, and then open them, and thumb through looking for the Large and Superstar, and on the back the Jim Everett and Large and Combo, just looking for the different combos. And I'm the guy who drove the Steve Large Master Registry, you know, by submitting, you know, a dozen variations of this, and then at some point I'm like, gosh. How the hell does this set come together? It's pretty interesting. So, my obsession of the set came, you know, at a later date.
And to me, stickers in football have been so overlooked over the years. I mean, I remember in the early 70s, you had the NFLPA Wonderful World of Football stickers where you had a big album. And for whatever reason, those stickers weren't on sale for a long period of time. And I still got my two original albums of those. I'm still missing stickers in both of them. For whatever reason, the 1972 series, I must have only bought about probably four or five packs, and that was it. And then they were gone. They never saw them in the store again or whatever. And for whatever reason, they were very difficult to find. So over the years, I've been trying to piece together both albums and find the stickers I need. The 71 I'm much more closer than the 72. 72 I need a ton of stickers. I'm hoping I can land upon a full album with the stickers in it at a very reasonable price, and I'll just pick up that type of thing. But it's a great story as far as stickers and football, and I want to make that a topic for another show. All right, we're almost out of time. Check out our website, gridirongreatsmagazine.com. If you're not a subscriber, please subscribe. Information is there. Joe, wrapping it up, we're literally out of time. Anything else? Last second.
Talking football.
Seconds,
talking football with the captain. Talking football with the captain. I can't think of a better thing to do. Thank you.
It's a very interesting wide range of subjects. Wide range of subjects tonight, to say the least. We went from the Walker's Cleaners to the 1988 Top stickers and a lot of stuff in between. Thanks for listening. And we'll be back with another show before the end of the month. Take care.
Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Arnie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.